The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to The Guardian Football Weekly, a Premier League preview special. And like any good Premier League preview special, we'll start by talking about Lionel Messi. The deal is done, £1 million a week, screaming fans in Paris, keepy-ups on the pitch. Whatever else can be said will be said in the first 5 minutes of the pod. And then the Premier League, the best league in the world, is back. And we'll go club by club over two pods so you are completely prepared for the season start on Friday night. So today, from Arsenal to Leicester, from Ben White to Patson Daka, trying not to forget one team altogether and giving airtime to everyone. Because there is life beyond the top four, you know, something we'll almost certainly forget this time next week. We've challenged our panellists to discover one fascinating thing about each side that no one knew until now, unless you too have looked at Wikipedia. We'll answer your questions, and that's today's Guardian Football Weekly. On the panel today, Barry Glendenning, welcome.
G'day, Max.
John Bruin, how are you?
G'day, Max.
And Rich says, did you only get Jordan on because Villa is in this half of the alphabet? Jordan, welcome.
Up the Villa. Good morning, Max.
Right. Joachim says, how will Barry celebrate when PSG crash and burn out of this season's Champions League? Lionel Messi officially joined just after 9 o'clock Tuesday UK time. He signed a 2-year deal with a 1-year possible extension. He'll be paid a signing on fee of €25 million and a net salary of €25 million a year as well. The announcement video was a 2-minute drone tour through the stadium and the club shop before panning to a CGI Messi on the pitch at the Parc des Princes. We did a lot of this on Monday. Please go and find Sid's piece in the paper. It's brilliant. Johnny Liu wrote a great piece about it. Rory Smith in the New York Times and Miguel Delaney did brilliant pieces about what this means for football. John Bruin, have not heard your thoughts on it yet. What are your thoughts?
I tend to agree with Miguel and Rory on this in that it's really pretty depressing, and it's almost end game times for football, in that one of the points made was, okay, we didn't get the Super League, but instead we get this, and that is Lionel Messi joining up with PSG. But what we are relying on is the fact that football doesn't necessarily follow the logic of the best player signs for this very good club and they now win the Champions League. And I tell you what, if PSG don't win the Champions League and go out, I shall be joining Barry in however he celebrates, because PSG, I think the stat was that they added 20 million extra Twitter followers as a result of Messi's signing. But I tell you what, I think they made themselves more unpopular as well. For those of us that like the underdog spirit, I'd be delighted to see PSG crash out of the Champions League. And it's not beyond the realms of possibility either, because Lionel Messi of 2021 is not the Lionel Messi of 10 years ago, is he?
I'm a little bit bored by it already, I must admit. I mean, the move's been done and whatever, you know. So there's that element to it. I do agree with John at the lack of imagination. I mean, if Messi had to leave Barcelona, I just, you know, the fact that he's gone to PSG for me is a little bit tiresome and a bit meh. I'm conflicted because I do really want Messi to win another Champions League, but I really, really, really don't want PSG to win a Champions League either. So, I'm getting a little bit tired of it already. The move's been done. Let's move on and see what happens.
I think there is something fascinating, though, Barry, about how one human, like Jordan was saying, that the impact on the club, on, you know, the branding of the World Cup, how one human being, you know, who just, we're all just a human being, can have that impact. It's sort of, that does show, for good or for bad, that the power of football, right?
Yeah, it's slightly ludicrous in the manner in which various news outlets have just completely lost the run of themselves over it. Well, I suppose it's not surprising, given their predilection for bombast at even the slightest minor transfer. But the whole thing it leaves me pretty cold. I did enjoy Rory Smith's article, but the one thing I'd possibly disagree with him on is he said that the only place Messi could go was PSG. apart from, or sorry, the only place he could go apart from the place he wanted to be or wanted to stay at was PSG. And I don't think that's true. He could have literally gone to any club in the world. He could have gone to Rochdale. He has managed to get over his grief of Sunday morning quite quickly. I wasn't expecting him to be in tears, but I would have liked to have seen, you know, a picture of him holding up the shirt, looking really sad. Like, who was the guy who signed for Everton?
Oh, Aaron Lennon, wasn't it?
Aaron Lennon, yeah, where he just looked thoroughly depressed as having signed for Everton. But I noticed I had to write my first rumour mill of the season this morning, and sort of the main story was that PSG, in an effort to trim their wage bill, are hoping to sell 10 players. And you're just thinking, good luck with that, because they have now distorted the market so completely that if they try to get rid of Ander Herrera or Julian Draxler or whoever, who are all on these massive wages, because of clubs like PSG, no other European sides can afford to take on those wages that they're paying those guys. So I suspect they may well be saddled with most of them.
And one final question on this, and it's quite a difficult question to answer briefly, bearing in mind we've got, you know, 10 Premier League sides to give equal airtime to, with apologies in advance to Burnley. You said, John, you know, this is a... We had the choice of the European Super League or this, which is essentially Manchester City, Chelsea and PSG just having so much more money pretty much than everyone else. I may have missed one or two clubs there. This is the football that we have, and our choice seems to be is to either enjoy this one or be annoyed about it. And it's trying to find that balance, isn't it? Or I don't know. I don't know what I'm meant to do. I still want to watch all of this football.
Well, I suppose it comes in contrast to the Euros, which had a purity to it, didn't it? One of the best things about that was, one of the best things about international football or international tournaments is that there is no transfer window. There is no Mr. 25% hanging around. There is no, I mean, there's commercial interests involved, of course, but not quite on that scale. And also, what they've essentially done in buying Lionel Messi is they've bought someone else's dream rather than creating their own. So, yeah, forgive me for not feeling the romance.
Right. Premier League is back. Bob says, typical left-wing London elite mainstream media bias to start with Arsenal. It makes me sick. So here we go. Arsenal, last season eighth. Manager Mikel Arteta, kickoff against Brentford away on Friday night. They've brought in Ben White from Brighton for just over £50 million. Also Albert Sambi Lokonga from Anderlecht and Nuno Tavares from Benfica. Notable players leaving. Well, there's no David Luiz to entertain us. Guendouzi's gone on loan. Saliba's out as well. Jordan, you're an Arsenal fan. Hopes and dreams.
So, Max, I really want to start this season not being miserable, because I felt last year I was miserable a lot. I was harsh on a lot of people and I was just like real grim. I just thought, that's not cool. Just trying this year with a little bit of positivity. And the first two teams we're going to review are going to make me really miserable and angry here. So that's not a really good start to the season for me. So Arsenal, I'm fearful for Arsenal, because I don't think they're ready to significantly improve on where they finished last season. I think Mikel Arteta is in trouble. And you know that I'm a big fan of his. I think he's got 10 games to really show that he can improve this Arsenal team and improve on the job that he's done so far.
We'll start the Jordan Jarrett Bryan 10 game countdown then on Friday night.
I do, and it's not an easy start for Arsenal. They've got Brentford on Friday, and I know that Arsenal did beat Fulham last season, but generally going away to a promoted side on the first game of the season in their brand new stadium, bouncing their first time in the Premier League, that's not going to be good for Arsenal. So I do fear Arsenal this year. I think we're going to get to our predictions where teams are going to finish at some point in the season, but I do fear that Arsenal won't improve on last season, and I do fear that Mikel Arteta by Christmas will be gone. They just don't have the squad, I think, to really show me that they can kick on from last year. And I don't think Mikel Arteta has done enough to make me believe that with that squad, he can squeeze the maximum out of it.
It's a worrying moment when this early in a pod I turn to Barry for reasons to be positive, but it's what I'm going to try to do, Barry.
I don't necessarily agree with Jordan. I'm utterly convinced Brentford will beat Arsenal on Friday. I think that's a certainty. But I'm not convinced that Mikel Arteta is any good as a manager. But Arsenal fans looking for reasons to be cheerful. They're not in Europe. That's going to give him a lot more time to work with his players during the week. They had a strong finish to last season. I think they got 47 points from their final 24 games. That's a decent return. If Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang can start banging in goals again. I mean, I remember how excited Arsenal fans were when he signed a new deal last August. You know, that they were beside themselves with excitement. He hasn't really delivered. But they have some very good young players in Bukayo Saka, Emile Smith-Rowe, Gabriel Martinelli, Kieran Tierney, Thomas Partey's first season was curtailed and hampered and punctuated by injuries. If he can get a good run in the side, he may well come good. So while I don't expect Arsenal to significantly improve on last season's placing, I would be going into the season with optimism if I was a gooner, but I still think they will lose against Brentford on Friday.
John, is it Ben White has come in as their big signing. I mean, that is, he's a wonderful player. I wonder if their goalkeeper is good enough.
Burned Leno, poor Leno, as the band Rooksop used to have it. Yes, I wonder that too. And of course, the reserve goalkeeper that they had, Emilio Martinez, is at Aston Villa and actually looks better than Burned Leno, doesn't he? Yes, that would be a certain weak point within the team. I'm reasonably optimistic about Arsenal. I have some faith in Mikel Arteta. I also have some faith in the young players that Barry listed there. Smith Rowe, I mean, Aston Villa tried to buy him as they tried to buy everybody else, actually. And Saka, of course, you know, will have the backing of most fans after what happened at the Euros. And I think Arteta has kept the players that he wanted to. I mean, Xhaka is signing a new deal, and he's become that leadership figure for them. Listen, I don't think Arsenal are going to be qualifying for the Champions League, but I can see them finishing fifth or sixth. But at the same time, I wouldn't be dismissive of Jordan's concept of 10 games to save himself for Mikel Arteta. The only thing I would say against that is I don't think that the ownership is minded to get rid of him at this point.
I've got Arsenal 8th. Barry, where are you putting them?
7th.
John?
I'll go with 7th, yeah.
Jordan?
I've got 7th.
Right, okay. Winners of the Everton Cup. John, you were tasked with finding an interesting fact about Arsenal Football Club that people can wow their friends in the pub with.
Okay. I think Arsenal are the only club to have had two former players be a guest host of Top of the Pops.
Oh, that is really good.
Yeah.
Wow. Do we have to guess them?
That is good.
Tony Adams do it?
You can guess one of them. He's very famous to this day.
Ian Wright.
Righty.
Yes. And the other one, I'd be very surprised if you got him.
Perry Groves. Glenn Helder.
No, it was in 1970, so...
Frank McClintock?
Charlie George?
Yeah, it played. No, it wasn't. Okay, I don't think you're going to guess it. Okay. He co-hosted with Tony Blackburn. This is Peter Marinello, who just signed from Hibs for £100,000, signed to be the George Best of North London. I think that worked out in one respect, but perhaps not on the pitch. Do you want me to run down the tunes that were on? Either of those. Well, let's go for Wrighty's one.
Let's go for Wrighty's one, okay.
Wrighty's one. On Wrighty's episode, which was the 28th of February 1997, we began with the Bee Gees, one of their comeback singles. Then we had Republica's Ready to Go.
Good.
Yeah. Then we had Sasha's Encore Une Fois.
Oh, yeah.
And then we had Kathy Dennis doing Waterloo Sunset. And then we had Bush doing their sort of Nirvana thing, whatever it was. Then there was a disappointing Prince single. And then we had Spice Girls doing Mama. Do you remember that one? Mm. You know, which was about their mums. Yeah. And then number one that week was No Doubt. That's Gwen Stefani, isn't it?
Not a bad rundown, that, really. Well, thanks. That's a very good fact. If they get better than that, I'll be impressed. Aston Villa then finished 11th. Manager is Dean Smith, away at Watford on Saturday. They brought in Buendia from Norwich, Danny Ings, Leon Bailey from Leverkusen, Ashley Young's back, to Nzabi as well on loan from Manchester United. Obviously, Jack Grealish has gone, as well as Mbwana Samata. So there's no What Samata jokes. Tom Heaton's gone to Manchester United. El Mohammadi has gone. I just presumed he'd be at Aston Villa for the rest of his life. Obvious question from Simon. Jordan's opinion on Villa this season: will selling Grealish and letting John Terry go expose Dean Smith as the weak manager we all know he really is?
So I've just got to start off by saying this narrative that I hate Aston Villa is so unfair and harsh. It's the fans I've got no time for.
Okay.
The fans are pathetic. It's the fans that I just think are an embarrassment. I just... sensitive babies. I've got no time for the Villa fans. Oh, but Aston Villa, the club.
Ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
Apart from that one year they went down embarrassingly, and it was really embarrassing. I've got no issue with Aston Villa. They're cool. They're fine.
But you don't really think, I mean, obviously every club has a set of fans who are annoying on social media.
Oh, they're the worst. They're the worst, Max.
Okay.
They're the worst.
They are far from the worst.
Yeah, I know. I wouldn't say they're the worst, but I'm not publicly announcing who I would say are the worst.
We all know who the worst is.
So I mean, I think, you know, the big question is, you know, Grealish is obviously such a huge player for them, you know, and did so much for them. You know, this new stat, XT, expected threat, that I was reading about yesterday, he's top of the charts of that, you know, creating things. You know, it's sort of the new XG, I guess. But I think, Barry, that they've invested pretty well, Villa.
On paper, certainly. They've replaced him with three men, Buendia, Ings and Bailey. I don't know much about Bailey, I must confess. I'm a fan of Ings, and Buendia's been hugely impressive at Norwich. I think they will probably get over the loss of Jack Grealish. Now, he was absent for 12 games last season and Villa only won two of them. They averaged 1.73 points per game with him in the side, 0.93 of a point per game without him in the side. So clearly he makes a huge difference to them. But I wouldn't say they'll be in any danger of going down with the squad they have. They may make more signings. There's talk that James Ward-Prowse could come in from Southampton. I think he'd be an excellent addition to any team outside the sort of big four. And players visibly improve under Dean Smith, as far as I can tell. And I'm not sure what Aston Villa fans' expectations are, but I would imagine they will be comfortably mid-table.
John?
Yeah, I'd go with Barry there. I think the only thing to say is the last time Villa bought in quite a lot of players or brought in a lot of players was after they were promoted to the Premier League, and it did take half a season. It took almost until, in fact, the pandemic stopped the season for Dean Smith to find a formula for that. I'm a Dean Smith fan. I think he's done a great job everywhere. Sorry, Jordan. And I would back them to, yeah, pretty much finish mid-table. The Grealish factor is obviously something that we're going to have to get over. They're going to have to get over, but I think they've brought good players. I mean, there's one player that I've seen them link with from a club we're going to talk about, Dwight McNeil. I think he might round them off as an attacking force. And, of course, they've got Ollie Watkins, who I think is a very good striker. They will be fine without Jack Grealish. It just probably won't be the same.
Can I ask, Max, is this expected threat, which I was unaware of, is this just some new nerdy term brought in to send people like Chris Sutton and various other proper football men completely over the edge and into the abyss of insanity.
I did interview Tom Warville from The Athletic on the radio yesterday. He was explaining what, you know, it's basically determining, you know, when a player gets the ball, do they affect the game in a way that gets you more likely to scoring a goal? So like players who pass the ball forwards, midfielders who run into the box, you know, strikers who take players on, et cetera, et cetera. I'm not an expert. A fact on Villa, John Bruin.
Oh, right, okay. Now, the one thing I thought about Aston Villa is that they're quite famous for having famous fans. In the news, David Cameron being one, of course. Now, what's the reason David Cameron supports Aston Villa? Being David Cameron, it's because his uncle was the chairman, of course. yes, his uncle was the chairman when they won the European Cup in 1982. An interregnum for Doug Ellis, of course, and I don't think Doug ever really got over that. But one more thing, the other one that I famous fan that I thought of was Nigel Kennedy, remember the violinist?
Yes.
Who I once ran into up outside the roundhouse up at sort of Camden Way, and he was wearing an Aston Villa shirt on that afternoon. Big Villa fan. And I was just reading that he performed in Poland and he had his entire orchestra wear Aston Villa shirts and led the audience in chants of Villa songs. And another gig that he did, which was so long that people walked out, he actually wore a Gabby Agbonlahor shirt for the second half of the show.
Brentford, third in the Championship, won the playoffs. Thomas Frank's their manager. Arsenal at home on Friday. We're all convinced that they're going to hammer Arsenal. Adam says, as someone who hasn't watched a lot of Brentford, what can we expect from them, Barry?
You can expect aesthetically pleasing football from a team who seem to have a tremendous sense of togetherness. There don't seem to be any cliques in that dressing room. I can't remember who wrote the Guardian guide or sort of pre-season preview of them, but they mentioned that Thomas Frank, he sort of has a strict no dickheads policy in the dressing room, sort of like the New Zealand rugby team. Although having seen several New Zealand rugby teams over the years, I'm not sure how strictly they adhere to that policy. But Brentford certainly seem to do so. They've got some fine players who Christian Norgaard and Mathias Jensen both impressed for Denmark during the Euros. Mathias Jensen in particular had the tough job of filling Christian Eriksen's size sixes after his unfortunate incident in the opening game. Rico Henry is a very good left back. David Ray is a good goalkeeper. And they're also a very well-run club, and they have the, you know, the stats pod. They're owned by a professional gambler and who has a stats-based model for recruitment. They don't have an under-23s team. They have a sort of a B team that feeds the first team squad. I think a few players have stepped up from that and come into the first team squad for this season. And obviously up front in Ivan Toney, they've somebody who scored 33 goals in last season, but that's not the only string he has to his bow. He's quite an unselfish player. I'm looking forward to them seeing them play, or seeing how they get on immensely, actually, as I imagine many people are.
Yeah, Thomas Frank said Ivan Toney is the best penalty taker in the history of the game, or something like that. So something to watch him spoon one wide or accidentally Panenka one into Bernd Leno's hands after 5 minutes. John, your thoughts?
I'm looking forward to Thomas Frank in the Premier League. I think every time I've seen him on TV, he's delivered good value, good copy. Swore, of course, when they won the playoffs last year. I'm looking forward to seeing Ethan Pinnock, a guy who was playing for Dulwich Hamlets not so long ago. And I think the expectation on Brentford is that they do something of a Leeds, which is coming up from the Championship, playing a style of football that's probably more suited to the Premier League than it is the Championship.
Barry, you were assigned a fact on Brentford.
Well, their old ground, Griffin Park, was named after a brewery who owned the land. And Griffin Park was obviously fabled for being the only football ground in England that had a pub in each corner. And my fun fact is that the governor of one of those pubs, who I won't name, but if he's listening, he'll know who he is from my hometown of Birr. And he was the last person to knee me in the bollocks in a dispute over who was next
for me as well.
An arcade game in the local snooker hall. And I've never forgiven him for that.
Yes, well, that is a fact that you're unlikely to hear on any rival podcast. I forgot to do where you think Villa will finish. Let's do Brentford first. I have got Brentford in 16th place. Barry?
I have them in 14th.
John?
17th for me.
And Jordan?
17th for me as well.
I also completely forgot where Aston Villa were going to finish. I've got them 7th in the Premier League. I'm not sure if that's a little bit bold, isn't it? Jordan?
I've got them 6th.
Okay, wowzers. You're just trying to curry favour after so much of them, aren't you? John?
9th.
Barry?
12th.
Okay, that'll do for part one. Part two, we'll begin with Brighton Hove Albion. Part two of the Guardian Football Weekly. Barry, we've got a live show. Mr. Plough says, my lovely wife, at Fluff Rice, can't wait to see how Barry tops brackets or ahem bottoms his previous live pod story. Thursday night on your laptops, me, Barry, Philippe and Wilson. If you want a ticket, go to theguardian.com/guardianlive. And we'd love to see you there.
I would preach caution. I genuinely don't think I can top that story.
<To see>.
unless something incredibly interesting happens to me in the next 36 hours.
It's hoping, eh? Now, Barry, you WhatsApped the group yesterday, Parental Advisory, saying, are we seriously having a roundtable discussion about Burnley? What's the fucking point? See also Brighton, Everton, Palace. All those four coming next. Something to look forward to. And actually, Shiga Phil says, does Barry still maintain his view from a couple of years ago that outside the top four, the Premier League is full of terrible teams?
Not outside the top four, outside the top nine. I mean, yeah, absolutely. There's some awful dross there. You know, every season, some terrible, terrible football teams stay up. And that is... I still firmly believe that any team that doesn't get 38 points should be relegated. And if that means 7 or 8 teams go down, then so be it. The teams that come up might not be good enough, but at least it'll be something different.
No, I don't necessarily disagree with that. So Brighton then, 16th last year, Graham Potter, their manager. Burnley away on Saturday at 3 o'clock. Why wasn't that moved for TV? is the question. Will Brighton win the XG Cup this year? It's interesting, Graham Potter, isn't it, Jordan? Is the jury still out or have the jury returned? And if the jury have returned, what is the jury's verdict?
The jury's still here and the verdict hasn't been delivered yet. I mean, I think that he has been roundly applauded for his approach play and his coaching methods. So far, he's kept Brighton in the league. They sacked Chris Hughton because staying up wasn't enough. The fans and the board, I believe, didn't like the style of play. And I think that Graham Potter has ticked that box in terms of they are aesthetically more pleasing to watch. The problem they have last year, as we all know, is that they didn't have anyone that could score any goals. So they've been creating all these chances and just missing them because they didn't have anybody clinical. And even at times, even in the box, to even miss the chances in the first place. So his big mission this year, as I see it, will be, can he keep the style of play that I think the Brighton fans have enjoyed, but just add 10, 15 more goals on top? And that 10, 15 more goals could be the difference between finishing 16th and 11th. So that for me is where I'm watching Graham Potter. Has he learned from last season? Does he have the tools now to be able to, you know, put the icing on the cake, so to speak, in terms of great build-up play, but put the ball in the effing net?
Enoch Mwepu, 20 million from RB Salzburg, scored 5 in 29. I guess if I was a Brighton fan, I'd be looking at those numbers and thinking, that sounds
he'll
like...
fit in.
they do play nice stuff, John, don't they?
Yeah, I watch quite a lot of Brighton. I did an inordinate amount of minute by minutes on Brighton games. I'm not sure why that was. But yes... agree with Jordan, aesthetically pleasing, but also a bit antiseptic. They just don't score enough goals. The threat's not there. Graham Potter, of course, was mentioned in dispatches for the Tottenham job and reasonably heavily linked there. That would have been, I think, a too big a step up for him. I think he does have something to prove, though I would back him as a manager. I do worry for Brighton for those reasons, that they don't score enough goals. And you do wonder, with them losing Ben White, I mean, David Proper's moved on, and you know, Matt Ryan and a few others have gone. You do wonder whether they've improved, and I think that clubs that stay the same put themselves in problems, don't they? The transfer window isn't closed, and I would expect Tony Bloom, the owner, to make some moves there, because I think those are required.
A fact, please, Jordan.
Sorry, Barry and John have put me to shame with the facts here, so I'm not going to lie, my facts aren't the most wowing and amazing, but I've got one here. Johnny Dixon, who plays...
Has Yves Bissouma ever punched you in the face?
Fortunately not, he hasn't. I've got here Johnny Dixon, who signed for £55,000 in January 08, is now an acclaimed film director and producer. He turned his ankle in his first Albion training session, delayed his debut by 2 months. He mainly made five appearances. But the end bit, Max, you might like this bit. He dated Holly Valance.
Wow.
Which I don't think anybody did know him. And a friend of mine who supports Brighton, because I was scrambling here, said to me that he knows that the Manchester City back four cost more than everything in Brighton's club history, including the new building, the Amex. Now, I've yet to fact check that, but I thought that was, if true, a fairly interesting-ish stat.
I thought you were going to say everything in Brighton, including the pier. and all those houses on the beachfront.
The pavilion.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I've got them 14th. I'm not sure if that's a bit generous. Barry?
16th.
Jordan?
I've got them 14th.
John?
18th.
18th. Relegation for Brighton Hove Albion. Burnley then, 17th last year. They've signed Nathan Collins, a centre-back from Stoke. Wayne Hennessy on a free, and someone from Scunthorpe. Ben Gibson's gone. Bailey Peacock Farrell, Robbie Brady's gone, amongst others. Rich says, is this the year that the pod finally lose all pretense and declare their love for Burnley and our 0.00 XG wins? Barry, can you really get... Here we go. Start the clock. 5 minutes. Burnley, go.
I don't know what to say about them, really. They've a very thin squad. They've brought in two players so far, Nathan Collins, a centre-back, who is unlikely to displace Ben Mee or James Tarkowski, which for me would lead to concerns that Tarkowski may leave because he's in the last year of his contract. I think he's an absolutely terrific defender, and I'm surprised he hasn't got more of a shout with England. I'm not sure how Sean Dyche feels about this lack of transfer activity. I suspect he's unhappy. They got new owners last season who haven't invested yet, ALK Capital. And, you know, they signed two players in January. They've only signed two this window, one of whom is Wayne Hennessy, who's going to be a reserve keeper. They have got a couple of young players who could step up. Lewis Richardson is an 18-year-old who won it. Could be one of them. Last season, they got 15 points fewer than the one before, and I suspect this could be the season they go down. I'll also be surprised if Sean Dyche is still in charge by the end of the season. Although, having said that, I said exactly the same thing in this podcast this time last year.
I'm impressed so far, Barry, that you normally, when you predict a league table, you normally put in one team twice and completely forget one. And at this stage, you haven't done that. So that's a great sign of progression, I would say. And actually, it's interesting, John, you were sort of saying if you stand still in the Premier League, that is not a good sign. And I'm tended to agree with Barry. Like, I didn't put a huge amount of thought into my league table, but I'm relegating Burnley as well.
I think yeah, between Burnley and Brighton, and you would expect, of course, and as I said, Brighton, I would expect to maybe invest a little bit more in the transfer window. At what point do Burnley fans begin to question that ownership? I suppose about the point that Sean Dyche becomes unsettled. If we recall when the league came back after the pandemic, Sean Dyche made a few noises about being dissatisfied about the fact that I don't think he was even able to play a couple of players because of the club's financial issues. Sean Dyche, the one thing is, Burnley have always made sure that Sean Dyche is well paid. He himself is well remunerated, even if the squad is fairly threadbare. But there may be other clubs in the Premier League that like the cut of Sean Dyche's jib, or even clubs in the Championship who are able to pay him even more money. And I tend to agree with Barry that I would be surprised to see him in the job this time next year. But then again, I also said that last year.
Yes, Jordan, we need to stop writing that. We've all written them off again. And like Burnley will come and bite us. Ashley Barnes and Chris Wood will just bite us again, won't they?
I'm just going to echo what the boys have said. I've got Burnley to go down as well this year. I think that you can only have a club playing that kind of football and seemingly not progressing so much before you get left behind. And I don't think Sean Dash will be there next year as well. So sorry, but yeah, it's a full house here.
Now I have to say here in what I'll put down as an administrative error, it appears no one was asked to find a fact about Burnley. It seems like it just sort of like, you know, like that. Because it seems like that would be on purpose. You know, like if it was Chelsea, you'd never do that for Chelsea. You know, like if you're a Burnley fan, all I can do is apologise and say on tomorrow's pod, we will assign somebody. Barry, tomorrow, can you come up with a fact about Burnley? We will begin the pod.
I've quite a busy day today, Max. I'm not sure I'll have time to visit the National Library and go through the microfiche.
But listen, first thing tomorrow on the pod, a fascinating fact about Burnley. We'll all find one. Where's everyone got Burnley? I've got them 18th, Barry.
18th.
John?
17th.
Jordan?
17th.
By the way, Max, when I did my league table, I didn't put in anyone twice, but when I counted the teams, I only had 19.
Sorry. And I've just messed up as well. Sorry, 18th. 18th. Sorry, 18th. They're gone. They're gone.
Who did you forget, Barry?
Southampton.
Right. Chelsea, fourth last year, won the Champions League. Thomas Tuchel, the manager, Palace at home on Saturday, 3:00. Arrivals, well, Lukaku is... if it's not completely done, he's done part one of his medical, part two after the break, as Paul Hawksby was suggesting on the radio yesterday. It should be like a reality show. A lot of players have gone, but, you know, they will be a force, John, won't they?
Yes, yeah, and I don't think anything less than not winning the title would be a disappointment for Chelsea, I think. Even though there's a few contenders in there, I think that, well, they got rid of Frank Lampard for the fact that the owners clearly didn't think they could push on for the biggest honours in the game. If you win the Champions League, then you've got to expect to push for the Premier League the next season. And they've got so many options throughout the team, strong in midfield. Maybe, I think, perhaps lacking a proper commanding central defender. Let's see if they do anything about that. But striking wise, once Lukaku signed, and we're yet to see the social media video that proves that Romelu is back at Chelsea. Really look forward to seeing that. But the amount of options they have up front are frightening. I think they're even Manchester City or Manchester United would struggle to match that level of artillery. I suppose the only thing against them is Thomas Tuchel, as good a manager as he is, and he admits this himself, is that the level of intensity that he works at can eventually count against him. But I do think we're in the honeymoon period here. I think Chelsea will go close, even if I don't think they'll win the Premier League.
Well, and John's right, isn't he, Jordan? That attack, I mean, Lukaku's such a brilliant player. We touched on it on Monday, but when you add that to Werner, who I... will say he's going to score buckets, you know, for years to come, and the movement of Havertz, and then you think about just the extra players, you know, Ziyech and Pulisic, and like it's all there are. I mean, I don't know how you don't fit them all in the team at the same time, but Tuchel managed to sort it well last year, and just adding Lukaku is sort of pretty frightening, really, for everyone else.
I'm really keen to see how Lukaku returns to the Premier League, because I think that there's been so many people critical, have been critical of Lukaku, and I've been one over the years about various elements of his game. You can't deny the last 2 years at Inter Milan, he significantly improved. He looks like a different person, first of all, physically. He's much slimmer, yet lost none of his power. I think he's coming back with a point to prove. I think he's commented on the fact that he's seen the comment about him. That I'm sure will spur him on. I'm really, really, I want him to really win this year and really get 25 goals and really shut everybody up who's been a critic of his. I'm so excited to see Kai Havertz this season. I think this year he's going to tear up the league. I think he's a player that is going to have a massive influence on that Chelsea team going forward. John mentioned the word honeymoon period in regards to Thomas Tuchel, and I think that's a very good word to use, because the sample size of what we've seen at Chelsea is only 6 months. So to kind of, I've got Chelsea very high up in the league, not to win it, but very high up. But I think that we have to kind of calm down a little bit and just remember, he's only been here half a year. It doesn't take much for Chelsea to kind of tip the other way. So despite having a phenomenal team, his biggest job for me is going to be keeping all those players you referred to there, Max, warm and happy and ready to go. Because there's a lot of attacking players to fit in a system that if he plays three at the back, a lot of attackers are going to not play a lot of games this season.
Can we have a fact, Jordan, please, about Chelsea?
On April the 9th, 1997, Chelsea played Coventry City. Oh, you loved one. That's for you, Max. You'll love this. Played Coventry City away in a Premier League match at Highfield Road. But the Blues didn't wear the traditional blue kits or their away kit. Chelsea, Coventry, the home side, played in their traditional light blue kit, and Chelsea travelled for the game with only their blue kit, their blue home kits. The referee felt that the two home kits clashed, and subsequently the kickoff was delayed by 15 minutes to resolve the matter. Since the Blues didn't have their away kit with them, they were given two options: wear the red and black checked away kits of Coventry or forfeit the match. Obviously, Ruhulit's side took the former option, but they lost the game 3-1 despite taking the lead.
It's a good fact. Where have we got Chelsea finishing? I'm putting them third, Barry.
Winners.
John.
Second.
Jordan.
Yeah, second for me.
So the Premier League champions, Chelsea. You heard it from Barry. And that'll do for part two. Crystal Palace coming up, Baz. Welcome to part three of the Guardian Football Weekly. Crystal Palace then, 14th last year. New manager, Patrick Vieira. Chelsea away on Saturday. Of the players they've brought in, I confess, Conor Gallagher on loan is the only one that I was aware of before. Some sort of very Crystal Palace-y players have left. Andros Townsend, Patrick Van Aanholt, James McCarthy, Wayne Hennessy, Scott Dan, Gary Cahill. And basically, they've lost a bucket of players. Roy Hodgson gone as well. And I suppose the thing is, John, the fascinating thing is Patrick Vieira and what he is as a manager and what we learn about him.
This, to me, seems like one hell of a risk. Now, I was looking at Patrick Vieira's time at New York City FC, and he did improve them a little bit, but it didn't go well at Nice. And you have to say, he's an untested manager. Now, you bring in an untested manager as opposed to Roy Hodgson, who I think you can say was the epitome of a tested manager. I don't think any manager has ever been quite as tested as Roy. And I'm reminded of what happened at Fulham post-Roy. It didn't go well. And, you know, they slowly slipped away. They lost all that experience. Again, you've got doubts over how much the owners are willing to invest in the club. So many of those contracts are allowed to expire, and it's pretty much all change. And I think I also am going to introduce the Frank de Boer concept, which was that, you know, four seasons ago, I think it was maybe five, they decided that they were going to rip up the Crystal Palace template and get in Frank de Boer. That lasted five matches, I think, at the very outset. I'm not saying Patrick Vieira is going to depart after so quickly as that, but I would be surprised if he lasts the season. And I will say it, I think Palace might finish bottom this season.
Wow. I'm in shock. I somehow have them 12th. I don't know what I've based that on at all, but Barry, some optimistic soundings from Crystal Palace. I think Vieira, I think people think all the players will start playing like Patrick Vieira at his peak, and that's not what happens in football. But I, you know, by all accounts, he's quite, he's not dissimilar to Roy in how he sets his team up. But how do you think they'll go?
I have no idea is the honest answer to that question. They have a huge rebuild ahead, so obviously their fans are excited. They've got a big name manager, even if his pedigree is questionable in management. They've got, you know, a load of old lags. They've got parole, as you said. They brought in some interesting new signings. I mean, you surely, Max, are familiar with Joachim Anderson, who was on loan at Fulham last season and was quite impressive. There's a lot of what ifs and maybes here. You know, Eberechi Eze is out indefinitely with a nasty cruciate or Achilles injury, I think he sustained towards the end of the season. There's been talk that Vieira is going to try and bring some youth players in. Southwest London is a breeding ground for some terrific players who've succeeded in the English league. David Omalabu, centre forward, Jasurin Raksaki, a winger, Malachi Boateng, a defensive midfielder, and Scott Banks, a midfielder, a 19-year-old. These are all teenagers. They may break through to the first team. I'm not going to claim to know a thing about any of them, but they are names that Crystal Palace fans are excited about. How will Zaha play? He's been kind of phoning it in for a while, and he clearly doesn't really want to be there anymore. Will Christian Benteke continue to score goals? He hit something of a vein of form towards the end of last season. So there's so many imponderables that I haven't a clue how they will do. It could be an absolute disaster, or it may be a very exciting new project.
That's why we all love the game, Barry, isn't it? Can you give us a fact about Palace, Baz?
Yeah, my fact about Palace, well, it's about Selhurst Park, which was the venue for Real Madrid's first ever game in London. They beat Palace 4-3 in a friendly to mark the installation of floodlights at the ground. And Selhurst Park also holds the record for the highest attendance at a fourth division game in England and the lowest ever attendance at a Premier League game.
I've got them 12th, Barry.
I have them 15th.
John?
20th.
Jordan?
I'm with you, Max. I've got a gut feeling they're going to do okay, and I can't quite work out why. I've got them 10th.
Blimey.
I've got them mid-table.
Talking of mid-table, Everton.
oh, wow. That's harsh.
not really, is it? I mean, Rafa...
No, it's not harsh at all, actually.
It's not harsh at all.
Rafa Benitez is the manager. Rob says, Everton versus Southampton in game week one. Is that the battle for seventh decided already? That is generous to Southampton, I'd suggest. Well, the big news is Rafa Benitez, Jordan. I mean, they brought in Damari Gray, Andros Townsend, Asmir Begovic. They're not necessarily names that are going to get the Everton fans pulsating with excitement. Be very interesting to see how it goes, won't it?
Yeah, I mean, Everton are a bit meh again for me. I think it's about Benitez's level now. I think he now, for a few years, has fallen out of that, you know, top elite bracket of international, you know, top class managers across Europe. He's fallen. I think he's living off his CV of back in the day, and Everton feels at the right level for him. You know, will he get them defensively organised? I'm sure he will. Will they score lots of goals? I'm not so sure. But I don't know how I feel about Everton, because Everton are just kind of meshed into that, as you said, mid-table side now that on a good year may get eighth.
They feel, John, to me, like a sort of on their day. You know, if Richarlison, Calvert-Lewin, Doucouré, Annan, you know, Digne, and you know, these players play well, their starting 11 is a good football team that can win matches, but on their day doesn't happen that often.
No. And the problem Carlo Ancelotti had last season was making them anything other than a counter-attacking team. On the counter, few better teams, but it didn't take long for the rest of the Premier League to work out that that was the case. So Rafa has to do some sort of reconfiguration of the team, and there are certain managers for whom the game moves beyond. Jose Mourinho will be one of them, and you'd suggest Rafa Benitez. You know, his peak was in the more defensive mid-2000s. And looking at that transfer business with Andros Townsend, Asmir Begovic, Demiral Gray's maybe slightly different, but you're looking at they're the sort of signings that he would have made at Newcastle. And that concerns me that Everton...
That he doesn't know where he is.
To be fair, I think Rafa does know where Liverpool is as a place. That is his home. But I would be concerned that those purchases, those additions to the squad, suggest that that's the Benitez aim for the season. And that is not going to go down well with Everton fans, who are already suspicious of him being there. I expect to hear the good old Goodison groan quite early in the season. He's got a lot of convincing to do, but I wish him well. It's going to be very interesting.
Give us a fact, Baz.
Everton fact, their nickname is the Toffees, and that dates back to the formation of the club in 1878. The ancient Everton Toffee House was a sweet shop owned by Olmab Bushell, who invented the Everton Toffee, which was popular among matchgoers who became known as the Toffee Men. And then when they moved grounds, Olmab Bushell became involved in a turf war with rival confectioner Mother Noblet, who invented the Everton Mint.
Wow, who knew?
I believe Paul McCartney likes an Everton Mint.
Oh, I'm a big fan of Everton Mint.
Everton, I've got them 10th. Jordan?
9th.
John?
10th.
Barry?
10th.
There we are. Leeds, 9th last year. Their manager is Marcelo Bielsa. Away to Manchester United, Saturday, 12:30 kickoff. That's a great opening game, isn't it? Will they burn out this season? They didn't burn out last season. There's lots of talk about your head in your hands,
no.
John. I'm only kidding. One of those windows, I think, Jordan, where keeping all their players, you know, you'd say, well, that's the best recruitment they've done. Calvin Phillips, Patrick Bamford, Stuart Dallas, the manager, etc.
Yeah, and they've not massively added to what they had last season, but I mean, as we all know, that's kind of how Bielsa likes it. And I don't want to get an angry email or message from Wilson perpetuating this myth that I think a lot of people feel that Bielsa teams always burn out. But I do feel that Leeds will regress slightly, but that shouldn't necessarily be seen as a negative. I've got them finishing 12th in my table, but 12th for Leeds in their second year back in the Premier League, I think that's a good finish. I think get a couple of years under your belt, staying in the league. The fans are loving what they're seeing. Yeah, there's going to be a few bonkers games. They're happy. That's fine. But I think a lot of people feel they should be kicking on. And the concern I have is that because they did pretty well last year in their first year back in the league, I think they finished 9th or 10th last season. Anything that's not that or better will be seen as a failure. And I don't think it would. I think 12th for them would be a really good year. So I think it'll be same again. And I think it should be round about same again for Leeds this season.
Baz?
I expect them to kick on. I think the fact that there'll be crowds at Elland Road will help them immeasurably. Interestingly, Marcelo Bielsa hasn't actually signed a contract yet. He's the only Premier League manager who isn't actually a Premier League manager at the moment, I think. But I fully expect him to do so. I was surprised that there wasn't talk. I haven't noticed any talk around Calvin Phillips. I thought there'd be a lot of clubs interested in him. But he seems perfectly happy where he is, and he's a wonderful player. And I wouldn't be surprised if he's happy where he is. It's his hometown club, his boyhood club, and Marcelo Bielsa has helped him so much in his career. I don't think he'd have been within an ass's roar of the England team if it wasn't for Marcelo Bielsa. So I expect him to emulate last season's performances.
John, any thoughts on Leeds and your facts about Leeds?
Yes, my facts. Now, when we were asked to produce these facts, producer Ian asked for Batty facts, so I went for David Batty.
Great.
David Batty didn't actually like football at all. And he only played it because his dad liked it. Now, if you remember when David Batty missed that penalty for England, the look on his face was just a sort of rueful, oh well, as opposed to the floods of tears that we get from everybody else. But here's the fact that I did enjoy about David Batty. So when he was at the club, Billy Bremner was the manager in his younger days there. And Billy Bremner used some old-style methods to toughen up the young David Batty, who was a bit lightweight. So he would call him into his office every morning to drink sherry with a raw egg stirred into it.
Oh, that's a terrible mix. What a horrible thing to do any morning. Sherry and egg.
Oh. And it worked.
That's true. Interestingly, Merz said that all the time about that penalty shootout. You know, he said two things. One, you know, that Merz was so easily, you know, Glenn Hoddle had this sort of power over Merz. Glenn Hoddle put his arms on Merz's shoulder and said, "You will not miss." And Merz was like, "Oh, thank God for that," and went and scored. And then he just said, David Batty honestly missed and went, you know, just in the changing room, looks like just, you know, taking his kit off, sort of saying, "What are you doing tomorrow then?" You know, like as if he's playing a Sunday league game. It's amazing. Leicester City then, last season. Fifth, manager Brendan Rodgers home to Wolves at 3 o'clock on Saturday. Spent 567 days in the top four over the past two seasons, more than any other team, but didn't make it into the Champions League. Even still, defied expectations given their respective size and other clubs. And when will someone start giving them the credit that they deserve, Barry?
I think they get no end of credit, and it is credit they deserve. You know, they have a reputation for messing up at the end of the season, and that stat you mentioned about them spending more time in the top four than anyone else without finishing in the top four is an interesting one. But you know, they don't have the resources of other clubs, but they do seem to be very well run. I expect them to do well this season, although they are blighted by injuries, and there seems to be talk that James Maddison might leave. That's a very fluid situation. He'd be a huge loss. He has been linked with Arsenal. I think that would be not even a sideways step, but a backwards step for him.
Yeah.
On a professional level, you know.
Ouch.
They may well pay him more money, but I think they will do well again. I think they increasingly have a claim to be among the big six, if not financially, but in terms of success. I was pleased that Christian Fuchs has finally been allowed to leave, despite having been held there against his will for the past two seasons.
He's free. Fuchs is free.
He's been reunited with his family in the United States.
And Ian Acho as well, you know, Jordan. I mean, Barry, you know, said he'd prefer Ian Marshall. Since then, Ian Acho has become sort of the most prolific centre-forward in football.
I think this is the season where the baton is passed from Vardy to Iheanacho. I think this is the season finally we see Vardy tailing off. I don't think you'll have a prolific season, Jamie Vardy. And I think that Iheanacho, there's 15 goals minimum there I'm predicting for him this season. I'm really glad that you mentioned Kasper Schmeichel just briefly, because I think he doesn't get spoken about enough. I think he's the third best keeper in the league behind Alisson and Edison. I think he's been the top five goalkeeper in the league for the last 5 or 6 years. I really would like Arsenal to try and take him. But as Barry mentioned regarding James Maddison, I don't think it would necessarily be a forward career move for him to join Arsenal. But I think he's a brilliant goalkeeper. Leicester have probably the most exciting group of players from front to back of any team in the league for me. So I'm expecting another really positive season for Leicester City this year.
Your fact, Jordan? Final fact for this pod?
My final fact for Leicester City is, they hold the joint record most second tier title triumphs. So if you can get around that one, I didn't know that. The Foxes have won the First Division 6 times and the Championship once, meaning they are level with Manchester City on 7. I didn't know that.
No, but you are right. John's facts were better.
They were much better than mine.
I've put Leicester City 6th. Which partly is because I've been stupid about Tottenham.
You have. Yes.
So you can count that as 5th. Barry, where are you putting them?
4th.
John?
5th.
Jordan?
I've got two hot takes, and one of them I can't reveal because it's on the other side of the draw. But my first one is with Barry. I've got them finishing fourth this season.
I mean, you can give us your hot take because you're not on tomorrow. What is it?
Well, it's Wolves to go down. I think Wolves are going to go this season.
Do you know what? I relegated Wolves, and then I messaged my mate who's a Wolves fan. He said, no, look, there are some other teams that aren't as good. And I was actually, you're probably right. It goes back to the fact that I just agree with whoever last spoke to me. And also, I forgot where Leeds were going to finish. I've got them ninth. Barry?
Sixth.
John?
I hope I haven't said this position before, but I think 11th.
Okay, that's fine. And Jordan?
I've got them 12th.
Okay. Now, during this pod, someone messaged me to say that I was the seventh trend on Twitter. Then it turned out that actually that was a bloke called Max who's slept in a tent for 500 nights running. But there is a reason that both John and Barry said g'day to me, which is the personal news tweet that I sent out earlier today, Barry, that I'm moving to Australia. Mrs. Rushton is delighted to host the Champions League for Stan Sport, who have got the Champions League Europa League rights this season. I am continuing to do the pod. So this is me saying thank you to the bosses for letting me do that. Barry, I've invited you to come with me, haven't I?
Yeah, I think that's one of those hollow showbiz invitations.
No, look, well, you can't live with me, but you know.
I'm tempted to take you up on it.
I think we could.
Quite amusingly, I've had to sit on this news for quite a long time, and mm-hmm. I'm not very good at keeping secrets. So you did say to me that, you know, you'd be back in 2 years. You won't. I mean, that's a certainty. That's something your wife has told you to you know, make it easier for you to go. You will not be back in 2 years. I mean, if you're living in Australia for 2 years, you're not going to want to come back to London. Why would you? But I wish you every success, Max, and I'm glad you're staying on to keep the pot.
Exactly the same. I'm not sure you'll be able to come back anyway, the way things are at the moment.
I'm surprised you're being let in.
I was getting fed up with it. I was fed up with the fact that I could go into a pub and have a beer and see my friends. I just was desperate for another lockdown. Yeah, if you are in Australia, if you could just get everybody vaccinated in the next 3 weeks, that would be very useful. We'll be back. I'll be back for live shows and you know, those kind of things. So that is the plan, to come back, probably not this Christmas, but come back next summer, come back next Christmas as well, when we're allowed to do live shows again. And obviously we do an Australia tour, to which everybody is welcome.
I've always wanted to play the Sydney Opera House.
I think we can do it. Let's Sydney Opera House 2023. That's the plan. But anyway, as far as the pod is concerned, nothing has changed unless, like, within 3 months I start calling everyone a galah. And just talking about surfing, then you'll notice that something terribly wrong. Well,
one of the huge drawbacks of lockdown is that I've started watching Home and Away again. So wow. I fully expect you to turn up in Marilyn's coffee shop, or be keeping my eyes peeled for you in the background.
Is Flathead still doing his rounds? Or
no, he's not.
I have already messaged Alan Fletcher, Dr. Carl Kennedy, to ask for my walk-on role in Neighbours. It's something. The current agreement is he walks into the coffee shop and just says, "I've got that thing for your rash," and then I say, "Oh, thank you." That's the moment. So that's the dream. That'll be when I've really made it. Anyway, as far as listening to the pod goes, it should make no difference to you whatsoever. And that'll do for today. A long pod, but you know, it's the start of the season and all that. We'll be back tomorrow. Philippe Auclair and Mark Langdon joining me and Baz, but for the time being, John, thank you very much.
Cheers, Max.
Thank you, Jordan.
Peace.
Cheers, Barry.
Thank you.
We'll be back tomorrow.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.